You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is Ocean Avenue, a big and bustling street in downtown Long Beach, a couple of blocks from the water, not far from the Aquarium of the Pacific, if you know the area. Let's stop in front of a glossy seven-story apartment complex, the Ocean Air. It's only 2 years old. It has the amenities of a typical luxury apartment building. 24-hour gym.
There's a pool, a jacuzzi. There's two rooftop patios, and then you get your own personal balcony.
That's Kishana Harrell. She lives here. She and her boyfriend pay $2,566 a month for a one-bedroom. Not cheap. But together, they can afford it. She works as a mortgage loan processor. He is a software developer.
If it were just me by myself, I may be able to afford to live here, but it would have been really tight. But because it's the two of us, we're okay.
Nothing out of the ordinary here, right? A fancy new apartment building in an expensive neighborhood with high rents. Well, here's the twist. Rents at the Ocean Air are about to go down, thanks to a new government program that converts market-rate buildings in some of California's priciest areas into moderate-income housing. KCRW reporter Anna Scott is here to tell us all about it. Hey, Anna.
Hey, Steve.
This is a housing story I've never heard before, a building that started out expensive but is getting cheaper on purpose. Explain that.
Yeah. Usually we start with an old building with cheap rents that's about to get expensive, right? But in this case, the Ocean Air in Long Beach has a new owner, and it's being turned into apartments for moderate-income households. Actually, Kishana Harrell and her boyfriend earned too much to get a rent break under this new program, but she is still happy about it. She definitely sees the need for this.
Everybody doesn't have a two-income household, but everything should just be much more affordable, even for us.
So who will benefit from this then if Kishana and her boyfriend are not benefiting? What is moderate income?
Well, think teachers, some retail workers, government employees, healthcare workers. You know, in LA County, moderate income means, for example, one person making up to about $67,000 a year, or a four-person household making about $127,000 a year at the high end. So, I mean, really, just pick any industry and you will find people in that range.
Why, Anna, is this program focused on the income range, though? I mean, isn't there more of a need for low or very low income? I mean, it's what we talk about a lot on this program and throughout the radio station. I mean, LA's got a giant homelessness crisis, right?
Yes. There's more of a need for low and very low income housing. And the thing is, there are already government programs to help build traditional affordable housing for people in those income brackets, like state or federal tax credits, for example. Affordable housing is very hard to build. The need definitely exceeds the supply, but there is at least some roadmap. But homes for people in the middle, there hasn't been government financial support to build them, and there aren't really any incentives for just regular real estate developers to do it either. So it gets left out, even though it's needed. I mean, who do you know that can really comfortably afford their housing, you know? Some people call this the missing middle of the housing market. And we're talking today about a first-of-its-kind program to help finance that kind of housing.
So this, I guess, is a government program, right? I mean, what government are we talking about, and what's the program?
Right. So the government entity behind this is one that probably you haven't heard of. They're called the California Statewide Communities Development Authority, CSCDA. They help cities and counties around the state use bonds to finance all different types of projects with some kind of public benefit. So they have this new program now focused on creating moderate income housing. Since December, CSCDA has bought seven properties in LA and Orange counties with a total of about 2,000 units that they're going to turn from market rate into moderate income housing. 2,000 units doesn't sound like a huge number on the one hand, but on the other, if you were building those from scratch, that could take years. They have the Ocean Air in Long Beach. There's a very large complex in Glendale called the Altana. They have three buildings in Anaheim, one in Monrovia, and one in Carson.
So how does the conversion from market rate to moderate income work?
From the tenant's perspective, the rents go down slowly as people move out or as leases expire. So everyone who's there now gets to stay. If they qualify as moderate income, they'll get a break when their leases are up. Everyone else just pays their regular rent, but when they leave, new tenants who move in will need to qualify as moderate income.
How big a break are people getting on rent?
It varies a lot, and every building is different, but generally the buildings get divided up into three tiers, with some apartments priced for people at the lowest end of moderate income, some in the middle, some at the highest end, and depending on which income bracket an apartment is priced for and how big the apartment is, the discount could be as big as $1,000 off of market rate or as little as $150 or less.
All right, so that's from the tenant's perspective. How does this work from the landlord's perspective?
Well, these buildings cost hundreds of millions of dollars to buy, and CSCDA isn't going and buying them for cash. They issue bonds, which are bought by investors and paid off over time through rents and interest. CSCDA partners with real estate companies who manage the buildings, and they don't pay property taxes on these properties because they're a government agency.
It's obviously well known that many people need breaks on rent. There are a lot of people who have difficulties paying rent. Is this going to be an expanding project?
It might grow. The head of CSCDA says they have a lot of deals in their pipeline, but also this is an experiment. I mean, you just heard the range of savings for tenants. It's just not clear yet how helpful this will be over time for how many people and how the benefits will compare to the costs, like the lost property tax revenue. That's one reason that in Long Beach, they made the Ocean Air a pilot project. They're not going to do more deals like this until they see how that one goes. In the city of LA, they're also checking this out as a possibility.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned these deals have been done around the county. You I think you said Carson, right? And mm-hmm. in Monrovia. But what about the city of L.A., the city limits of Los Angeles?
Well, the L.A. City Council recently voted to look into becoming a member of CSCDA in order to do deals like this. The council member who made the motion, Bob Blumenfield, represents parts of the valley.
I've been very focused on this missing middle piece. You know, we're building an abundance of luxury housing. And we're actively creating low-income housing, but we're missing the middle.
He sees a lot of potential in this, but he asked for a study on the possible upsides and downsides.
It's one of those things where if you can make it worth it and you could scale it, you could make a real difference. It could be transformative in many ways.
So the city council voted to explore it. What happens now?
The city's housing staff studies the deals that have been done. They analyze the program, and they're supposed to report back to the city council next month. So we'll keep an eye out for it.
All right. KCRW's Anna Scott, who covers housing and homelessness. Anna, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. From a program to help lower your rent if you find yourself squeezed, to one that can be a lifesaver if your options are even fewer. Santa Barbara started a safe parking program back in 2004 for folks living in their vehicles, one of the first in the country to offer not only a reprieve from expensive parking tickets or that 3 a.m. knock on the door, but also supportive services needed to get people into more permanent housing. The program's been a model for similar ones, including one here in L.A. called the Safe Parking L.A. program, which began about 5 years ago. Now, those kinds of programs rely on donations and grants. One House member, however, now wants the federal government to chip in as well. Last week, Congressman Salud Carbajal unveiled new legislation that would set aside $125 million in federal funds for those kinds of programs targeting people living in vans, cars, RVs. Christine Schwartz is executive director of New Beginnings, which is a nonprofit in Santa Barbara that organizes the safe parking program there. Christine, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How did your program get started? I mean, a lot of people obviously living in their vehicles, and it's a problem, right? Trying to live in your car. Well, I mean, there are just so many failures on so many levels to have to live in your car, right?
Sure, sure. Yeah. You know, the population really represents the middle class who finds themselves in some sort of a crisis. They lose their housing, they lose their support system, they lose jobs, they might lose relationships, and they find themselves in a situation where they have a choice either to go to a shelter or car camp, right? Or live in their car. And in Santa Barbara, we had a situation in 2004 where we were really seeing a lot of vehicles parked on the streets, parked in our parks, and our local homeless advocates, a county supervisor by the name of Susan Rose, a county supervisor by the name of Naomi Schwartz, who the bill is named after, saw that there was a situation and said, we have resources right in front of us, empty parking lots. You know, why don't we repurpose them to meet this critical community need?
You mentioned you operate 26 lots. I mean, what kind of lots are we talking about? I mean, businesses, grocery stores?
No, it's government lots. So city and county owned commuter lots and business parking lots. We have nonprofit parking lots. We have for-profit lots. And we have many faith-based organizations that provide lots to us. We do provide insurance for each parking lot owner against any, you know, issues that might arise. And we've actually, knock on wood, we haven't had any issues in the almost 20 years that the program has been in operation.
Did you have any difficulty getting people to buy into this?
Oh, yes. No, we still do. And we're in the process, actually, today we're headed up to North County in Lompoc to have a community meeting to talk to the neighborhood where we are going to open our first lot up in North County about the program. And there still remains a lot of fear and a lot of concern about bringing homelessness to, you know, the neighborhoods where we open the lots in. So there continues to be pushback, even in our county where it's been very successful.
But this is a program that not only helps to bypass those things that happen while you're living in your car, but also to help you, you know, get back on your feet, to get back into permanent housing, right? How does that work? And what are the rules that you have to abide by when you're on one of your lots?
Correct. Yeah. So good questions. We operate the program from a no barrier or low barrier perspective. And that means we try to make it as easy as possible for people to come in. You know, they don't need a job. They don't need a certain amount of income. They don't even have to be sober or anything. You know, they can have mental illness. The basic requirements are that they have to have a driver's license, registration, and insurance. And even if they don't have those things, we will work with them to obtain a driver's license or pay their registration or get that smog check. And we have funds for those types of expenses. You know, there are a lot of rules that we have in terms of how to, you know, behave while in the parking lots. It's not a situation where they can send out a tent and, you know, invite friends over and have a barbecue. It's really a shelter, right? So it really is a place for them to come to at night to be able to go to sleep and to safely be off the street and to have people out there protecting your safety. And then in terms of connecting people to housing, we match our money or combine our funds with other funds that are available to help people with housing. So there are funds called rapid rehousing funds that come through different government funding cycles. And we utilize those funds in combination with local and private donor funds to help people get back into housing. And we're pretty successful. In last year, we housed about 70, a little over 70 people just through that program.
70 people just in the last year. How many people do you think you've helped over the years in the near, well, let's say 17 years that you've been going?
We have enrolled over 10,000 people, and we've housed well over 1,000 people since its inception.
I mentioned Salud Carbajal. This is the congressman whose bill obviously has a bit of a ways to go before getting passed in D.C. What would funding like that do for your program and other programs if it is passed, if it does make it into law?
That legislation would be transformational for all programs that are operating a safe parking shelter. There is literally no federal funding that can be utilized to operate these types of shelters. So we, for the operations for things like, you know, lot management, staffing, mileage, porta potty rentals, all of the specific operations of the shelter, those expenses can't be paid for through anything other than local or private funding. You know, so being able to utilize federal funds would make it so much easier for communities across the country to open up these types of programs.
It's interesting to me because Carbajal is a Democrat. The bill is also co-sponsored by Doug LaMalfa, who's a conservative Republican from Northeast California, rural northeastern portions of the state. Has the housing crisis, Christine, gotten so bad that this issue actually transcends partisan lines?
Yes. And in California in general, I think we all know that housing is incredibly expensive and increasingly unattainable for people.
Christine Schwartz, Executive Director of New Beginnings, is a nonprofit in Santa Barbara that organizes a safe parking program. Christine, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Coming up on the program, an Olympian from Greater LA trains for the Games in Tokyo this summer, games that are a year late because of the pandemic. You're going to hear that coming up on the program in just a moment. But first, I want to remind you about KCRW's Drive to the Future, where in these tumultuous times, your support goes beyond public radio. Over the past year, you've heard Greater LA's reporting on the people and places most affected by the pandemic, the testing that's been taking place, the hard-hit communities of low and modest income, more recently vaccinations. Well, during this drive, a portion of your contribution supports KCRW's community partners. We're focusing on housing, public health, education, giving a portion of our proceeds and attention to those causes. This week, we're focused on the important work that Kedron Community Health Center is doing in South Los Angeles. So when you support KCRW today, part of that contribution will help Kedron provide the community with mental and primary health care. KCRW.com/give is where to go. And wherever you are in Greater LA, know that you are an important part of our mission. Together we can build a better future. KCRW.com/give. And thank you for your support of KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Now to a series here on GLA, talking to local athletes getting ready for the biggest event of their lives. The Tokyo Summer Olympics start in July. Those games were postponed last year because of COVID. And there are actually some folks in Japan who think it's too soon to hold them this year, too. But so far, the organizers are saying the games will go forward. Now, you've already heard from water polo player Max Irving from Long Beach, who's training and playing in Greece. We had him on the show recently. Today, we're joined by swimmer Jordan Wilimowski from Malibu, who's getting ready to compete in the 10,000-meter race. That's 6 miles of swimming in open water. Jordan, welcome to you.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm all right. Most people have watched Michael Phelps and other swimmers, including yourself, compete in a swimming pool. What's different about the open water race?
Several things. For starters, it doesn't take place in a pool. It's usually in a lake, river, or ocean, just a large body of water. And you swim on a course, so typically it's a four lap 2.5 kilometer course. It's kind of like a cycling race where everyone's drafting off each other and there's a big pack of swimmers, and you race for about 2 hours and try and make sure you get your hand on the touch pad first.
So a couple of questions come to mind. Number one, you said lakes, rivers, or oceans. Lakes and rivers are freshwater. Oceans have a lot of salt. Is there a difference in swimming between those?
Not that I really noticed. I mean, obviously, I guess in the ocean you'd be a little bit more buoyant, but that's not really something that you can feel when you're racing. In all those kind of conditions, you got to be aware of different water temps, wind, and then I guess in the ocean you deal with current occasionally, but for the most part you treat them all pretty similar.
And there's a lot of physical contact too, right? When you're going in, you're going in with a lot of other people. So you're, you know, banging up against other people and trying to get into the water and then swim in sort of your own lane.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, some races I've done, there's been 60 competitors. The Olympic Games, I think, is 25. And so, yeah, when there's that many people all trying to kind of take the same line, you definitely run into other competitors, you know, kind of get pushed or elbowed, most of it unintentional. But yeah, you got to deal with other people kind of swimming your way. That's part of the race.
What's it been like thinking that you were going to compete last year? The Olympic Games are, the Summer Games are on even years, right? We were supposed to have them in 2020. The pandemic had other plans for us. You had to put those dreams on hold. What was that like for you?
Yeah, you know, obviously that is pretty tough when they announced that they'd postpone it. You know, you kind of feel like, okay, that's like a year worth of work that you've been prepping to, like, make sure you're at your best, like that exact date kind of out the window. But, you know, at the same time, I think given everything that was going on in the world, waiting 1 year to compete at the Olympic Games wasn't really that big of a deal. And I kind of gave you a chance to reset and kind of take a look back at your training and say, like, you know, what are some things that I can improve on and kind of apply it to this year and getting ready for the Olympic Games this summer.
Do you train in the ocean here in Southern California?
For the most part, all our training takes place in the pool. I mean, occasionally we'll go out for a swim every once in a while, but that's just more for fun or on a lighter recovery day. Yeah, we try and keep all our training in the pool.
I mean, it's really cold in the Pacific Ocean, right? We're still coming off of, you know, a chilly winter, so that water temperature is not very high. Are you expecting something like that in Tokyo?
Yeah, so the water temp actually in Tokyo is going to be quite different. They're projecting it to be, I think, between 84 and 85 degrees, which is pretty warm. So yeah, we've been kind of trying to incorporate that into our training, trying to make sure we get some pool time when it's really hot. So we kind of acclimate our body to that. But yeah, I mean, in terms of going out here, yeah, you need a wetsuit and stuff pretty much all year. So trying to avoid going out when it's too cold.
Did you see that recent LA Times article where they're showing pictures of sharks off the coast of Southern California and people are just, you know, oblivious to the fact that these sharks are there? These are great white sharks, by the way. These are big ones. Have you had any run-ins with sharks?
No, yeah, fortunately I missed that article. No, I mean, luckily when you're out there swimming, you don't really see anything. You don't really notice anything. We did actually have a race moved in 2014 when we were down in Australia because they claimed there was a chance of sea life coming onto the course. So, like, they meant sharks. But yeah. Other than that, yeah, I haven't really had to deal with anything like that, which has been nice.
What's it been like training this year? You said you've been mostly in the pool. Pools have been closed, or a lot of them have been, because of COVID restrictions. Has that affected your training in any way?
Yeah, for sure. It's been pretty tough to try and find pool space, especially in Los Angeles. So, you know, we've been driving all over the place, going out to Burbank to train there, or commuting back and forth down to Mission Viejo to train down there for the last 2 months or so. And just recently been able to find consistent training in Los Angeles. So that's been nice. But yeah, it's been pretty crazy this year, trying to, you know, kind of navigate the pandemic and make sure we're staying safe and doing the right thing, but also getting ready for the Olympic Games.
How are you feeling about your chances in Tokyo?
Yeah, I feel good. I'm happy with the work I put in the last, you know, couple of weeks heading in towards our pool trials. And so, yeah, hopefully have a strong showing at the Olympic Games this summer.
And at the Olympic Village, yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a little different than what you had to experience in Rio, right?
Yeah, they've told us about some of the procedures they've put in place in terms of social distancing at the village and testing every day and, you know, possibly doing contact tracing and all these steps that are definitely going to make it unlike any other world championships or Olympic Games. So, yeah, just trying to go into it with an open mind and be ready for, you know, whatever the situation's like over there.
Well, I want to wish you the best of luck, Jordan Wilimowski, open water swimmer from Malibu, preparing to go to Tokyo with Team USA, the U.S. Olympic team, in July. Jordan, thanks for your time. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That's it for today. Tomorrow, we're off to a bar that will only let you in if you're vaccinated. Is that going to be the way of the future? A reminder that KCRW's Drive to the Future goes on, asking for your support of the station that helps support you with news, culture, and music every day. KCRW has been a part of the LA Fiber for decades. It's LA's original and founding NPR station. It's here to inform you, educate, stimulate, entertain, you name it. KCRW.com/give. KCRW.com/give. You can also call toll free if you're driving, can do so safely. 800-600-KCRW. That's 1-800-600-5279. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears and time this evening. Have yourself a great night.